I'm here on the job site with Dale, who's a framing contractor.
Hey, good morning.
Dale traded up to Geico Commercial Auto Insurance for all his business vehicles. We're here where he needs us most.
Yep, they sure are.
We make it easy for him to save on all his insurance needs, all in one place, with coverage that fits his business and bottom line. Oh, I shouldn't have looked down.
It's all right.
We're so far up here.
Look at me. Take a deep breath.
Oh, I'm good. So good.
Get a commercial auto insurance quote today at geico.com and see how much you could save. It feels good to Geico.
Alive and kicking with Claire McKenna on News Talk.
New research from DCU suggests one in four employees is neurodivergent, yet many are struggling more, progressing less, and quietly burning out. The surprising part? The fixes aren't radical or expensive. Sometimes it's the smallest changes that make the biggest difference. Joining me to discuss this is one of those behind this research, Dr. Laura Gormley from the School of Inclusive and Special Education at DCU's Institute of Education. Laura, you're very welcome.
Thank you, Claire, and thank you for giving us this platform to open this conversation in a public way.
Tell us a bit about the research and what you were looking to find out more about.
I suppose my colleagues, Dr. Aoife Brennan, Dr. Christine O'Keefe and Dr. Izzy Fox, we started into this about 18 months ago, and we really wanted to gain a deep understanding of the workplace experience of corporate employees here in Ireland. But we were particularly interested in that lived experience of the neurodivergent employee. So we set out to understand that better. So we carried out a large scale survey, and the nerd inside of me was really happy. We got over 1500 responses across three corporate work sites, very different places, I suppose, in terms of work. And we were able to follow that up with focus groups to get a richer understanding from the neurodivergent employees around what they were telling us in the survey.
So this is the corporate workplace. So this is office 9-to-5 type work.
Absolutely, yes.
So what were some of the things that you heard?
Well, first and foremost, I think what was really interesting, and I was a little surprised but not too surprised, was one in four identified or were diagnosed as neurodivergent. So that includes things like autism, ADHD, anxiety, depression, sensory processing differences, dyspraxia, dyslexia. Like, there are only a few of the neurodivergencies that were cited, I suppose, by the participants. And what we were surprised, I suppose, to see was that we don't have figures in Ireland around neurodiversity and the prevalence of neurodiversity in our population, but we're kind of, our figures are quite reflective of what we're seeing internationally. So it's one in five in the general population internationally. So surprised, but also, you know, also seeing what we're seeing internationally, which was great. Unfortunately, we did see that the well-being of the neurodivergent employees was significantly poorer than their neuromajority colleagues. We had near almost 20% of the neurodivergent employees reporting that they had very, very poor well-being. We used a scale, the World Health Organization scale, to measure that. So that was one of our big findings.
And why is that? Is it more challenging for a neurodivergent person to show up to work every day? And is that what's draining their well-being?
That appears to be what is coming through. When you think about, like, going to work each day for any of us, it requires energy, cognitive energy, it requires mental energy, it requires physical energy. And those reserves can be depleted more quickly for neurodivergent employees who are having to adapt and try and perform in environments that are designed for the neuromajority. So things like bright overhead lights, things like hot desking, having to be in the office from 9-to-5, those can drain the battery of a neurodivergent employee much quicker than they do the neuromajority employee. Not to say that they don't drain everybody's battery, but that can happen much quicker for a neurodivergent person. So when that happens, you know, that impacts your well-being, your physical well-being, your emotional well-being. As a result, you're not going to be as productive or happy in the workplace.
And did this research speak to employees only, or did you get the opinions of the employers or line managers?
So we had a significant response from managers within the study. So over 50% of the neuromajority respondents were managers, and less so from the neurodivergent cohort. But we're also wondering, is that a reflection of the fact that in terms of career progression, the neurodivergent employee isn't progressing up the corporate ladder to the same degree as their colleagues? And I think that's something we have to explore further. We didn't in this particular study, but I think it's the starting point to explore that further. Like the accommodations that our neurodivergent participants suggested, like you said at the very start, really actionable, not crazy. You know, hybrid conditions, working conditions, but not just kind of your standard hybrid working conditions, true flexibility, giving them back the autonomy to be able to manage their own workload, trusting them that they know when they need to be in the office and when it's better for them not to be in the office. And if we can, when you think about going for a promotion, you're thinking about those extra responsibilities that you're going to have. And as a neurodivergent employee, then you're thinking, well, do I have the energy? Do I have the mental energy, the physical energy to take that extra piece on board? So if some of these accommodations are made in the workplace, then we might see neurodivergent employees becoming more confident around their capacity. But I also think we need to look at additional initiatives like the Athena Swan in higher education, which looks at promoting gender equality. Something like that in corporate workplaces for the neurodivergent employee.
Yeah, I'm always fascinated by this idea of flexibility. I don't know why we're so opposed to it. I don't know why we don't trust grown adults to show up and do their work. And if that isn't happening, well, then that's another, you know, case and situation that would need to be managed and discussed. But I really feel the majority of people, and the research bears it out, when you allow people to be open and honest about what is going on in their life and who they are, you get better productivity and better loyalty from the workforce. So it's actually a win-win. And yet, just because somebody is sitting at a desk from 9 to 5 doesn't mean they're necessarily working harder. And I do think we really need to start having these discussions. Where will this research go from here? Because you've made the recommendation, some of the things that you mentioned. What will happen with it?
I suppose companies are making moves around neurodiversity and have been doing so for the last couple of years. But what we're hoping with this report is to avoid this neuroinclusion illusion, whereby companies are making a stated commitment to embracing neurodiversity in the workplace, which is fantastic. But there's a gap with the day-to-day experience, that lived experience of the neurodivergent employee. It's not matching up. So what we're calling companies, we're calling corporate organisations now in a call to action to move beyond awareness and start to implement some of what we have in this report. They're actionable changes. They're small changes, even access to a quiet space. It doesn't have to be super sophisticated. It just has to be a space where maybe you could dim the lights, because it's not about a quiet space just in terms of what you can hear, but also your visual space as well, dimmable lights, even, you know, creating a culture where it's okay to wear headphones or earplugs, that it's not just an accommodation for Mary. Everyone is invited to do so, because really we're trying to get across the point here that while this all was channeled through our neurodivergent participants, these suggestions and recommendations could be beneficial for every employee. For example, the parent who has been up late at night with a sick child, for someone who's caring for their elderly parents. Like, these recommendations can create an inclusive workplace for everybody, and everybody can benefit.
Yeah, because we talk about work-life balance as if they're two separate entities, but it's all life, all mixed up together in one bundle. And I think that's how we need to start talking about it. Empathy and awareness is one of your key recommendations. How easy is it for workplaces to engage in education and become more aware of how they can help or how they can ask to be supported more?
So within the workplaces that we surveyed, they have their own in-house education and training around neurodiversity. And the The participants that we sampled were very positive, I suppose, about this particular training across all the three workplaces, which was really positive to see. But they did call for more co-production, more involvement of them, the neurodivergent people, in creating these trainings, these educational initiatives, so that the workplace, their peers, their managers can truly understand their experiences on a day-to-day basis. Because people are, coming out of the survey, people are accepting that accommodations are necessary and so on, but they might not be able to translate that into, okay, this is what is needed with the colleagues that I work with. So it's bridging that gap a little bit more. And our participants are definitely calling for that to be, for them to be part of that process.
Well, thank you for conducting this research. And it sounds like, as you say, this is, you know, one of the steps in something bigger. Things you learned here, you're going to bring into the next study. So when will that be happening?
Absolutely. We are hoping to get going on the next study and delve into certain aspects of what has come through in this piece of research. So looking at that career progression piece, looking at the well-being in more depth, you know, the importance of belonging and acceptance within the workplace. That's something that's very close to my heart, and I'd love to research more in that area now going forward.
Well, seeing as we're talking about the workplace, seems like a pretty cool job you've ended up with, Laura.
Oh, I'm very lucky. I have to say, DCU is very neuro-inclusive and really, in terms of autonomy and so on, I'm very, very lucky.
And it seems like a bit of a passion. I can see your eyes light up when you're talking about the work you're doing. Report co-author Dr. Laura Gormley from the School of Inclusive and Special Education at DCU's Institute of Education. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you, Claire.
Alive and Kicking with Claire McKenna. Sunday morning at 8 on News Talk.